Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop here with you. In just a moment, we'll be hearing from Frank Leboeuf as well as we look back on an important game for Everton at Goodison Park. 1-0 it finished at Chelsea after a mistake at the back from Azpilicueta. Richarlison pounced and got the only goal of the game. But at the other end of the pitch, it was a stellar performance from Jordan Pickford, including taking a ball in the face as well. But what an important 3 points they could prove to be for Frank Lampard's men, as we now welcome in a Frank of our own, Frank Leboeuf. Looking back on this game.
Oh, Shaq's taken a few in the face over the years. Can't you tell? Like Jordan Pickford.
But the emotion and the drama in this game, and we saw what it meant to all those home fans at the end of it.
It came from the crowd at the start, and that resonated to the players, the Everton players, who have seen the results go against them. And I was heard Shaq talking yesterday in the show about, and I totally agree, it's all very well having games in hand, but we've all, every one of us who have at times struggled down the bottom, it's just about points. And then you've got a loss of form, no confidence, you're at home, okay, that should be some help, sometimes it's not, depending on the pressure, against a side who, yeah, they're not playing brilliantly, but they're still a much stronger side. So it had to be a perfect scenario for Lampard's team. And I thought they got the energy from the crowd, and they pressed, and the question was, can they do that for 90 minutes? But they kept going, pounced on a mistake. And then the other bonus for them was that Chelsea are a team, at times, who'll just possess the ball for fun, but have no real natural clinical edge to their game. Okay, and a couple of times Jordan Pickford had to make some superb saves. We've just seen them on the replays. But it was a terrific response from Everton at a time when they were in a period of desperation at the moment, which they are. But this Chelsea side, you know, I don't know. You've only got Mason Mount and double figures on 10. And you've got Lukaku, who never even come off the bench. It's crystal clear that they're going to go out and replenish the front line in the summer, for me, given whatever the hell's going to happen with takeovers and whenever the hell that's going to be finalised. I don't know. But the money, and part of the money, is they're going to have to go and sort that front line out, because there's no point having that amount of possession and just not having an end product. It's just not going to get you over the line more often than not.
And with that in mind, Everton fully deserving then of that win today?
Absolutely, yes. And for a number of reasons. One, let me just say, as far as Chelsea is concerned, Craig's absolutely right. Wien and Havertz today, I thought were disappointing. Seeing that Jordan Pickford was the man of the match, no real surprise there. We're talking about one team third top, one team third bottom. But, and Craig also touched on this, when you're down the bottom, a lot of times playing at home is far more difficult than playing away, because you're not playing well and because you're struggling, and we've all been there. And then to see the crowd at Goodison respond from the opening whistle as they did, to invoke that kind of emotion into the game as they did, and I thought the team responded, and it became this emotional battle which served Everton far better. And then and for me, they were deserving of the 3 points for that, because they're the ones who rose to the occasion. Yes, Pickford was the man of the match and incredible saves, but this was about a struggling Everton team who responded in the moment against a team that are sitting third top, and really, despite their possession, I don't think lived up to some of their own expectations.
Even as a Chelsea man, Frank, you can't begrudge Everton that win, can you?
Well, you know what? I would say that I agree with Craig. The fact that Chelsea wants to possess the ball for 80%, but didn't have a chance or didn't have a shot on target the first half. So I have to say that you cannot deny the fact that the team wanted the most to win, won that game. You play at Goodison Park, you know the pressure you can have when you play away from home, and I did so many times. It was so hard to win over there. It's a fight. The Everton players were on the survival mode, where I think the Chelsea players, as all season long, tried to play well, tried to be perfect, tried to be clean, where in front of them, they had players ready to play dirty. And that's what it is when you want to survive. Mina explained the world to Havertz in that manner in the Premier League when you want to survive. And Havertz fell into the trap instead of going away a little bit, tried to be a little bit smarter in that matter to avoid Mina and avoid that fight. But I agree, Chelsea did well for 80% of the game, 80% of the plays, but as all season long, couldn't finish the job, where Everton were trying to survive and did very well.
And talking about doing very well, this is where we start to see with Frank Lampard, the other side of being a manager, getting the fans behind the team, ensuring that you get that battle cry to those players. Did he succeed in doing that today then?
Absolutely. And as Frank just touched on there, it was a scrappy game for long periods. Referee had to get involved. There was bookings. There was arguments between captains, Seamus Coleman, Azpilicueta. Exactly what Everton wanted, try and disrupt Chelsea's game. Look, if the game was played up to the edge of the penalty box, Chelsea would be in this title race. But it's not. And that's something they're going to have to figure out. But, you know, from Frank Lampard's point of view, and, you know, I don't know what's going to happen between now and the end of the season, but if they do get over the line and stay up, the message I think he'll be sending to the fans is, this won't happen again. This recruitment, this buying and spending almost as much money as some of the big teams, or so-called big teams, and being in this position, that's a problem. So, you know, and we talked about Carlo Ancelotti earlier, at Real Madrid manager who was managing Everton last year. I don't think they'd be in this position if Carlo Ancelotti was manager, but I don't think there would be anything further than sort of a few places above or mid-table, which tells you all you need to know about this squad. But a huge day. I know one man who's probably happy, Don Hutchinson somewhere, who was probably sitting there.
He was on the call, I think, today.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
He got very emotional.
The last 10, 15 minutes of Don Hutch on that call, because every Everton fan, and I know Don's very passionate about Everton, one of the several clubs that he played for, but whenever the camera cut to those supporters at the end and the 7 minutes went up, you can feel, you can sense and feel the agony and the desperation, and your one bit of brilliance or your one mistake from somebody away from potentially, you know, heading to the Championship. Lots of football to play, extra game left for Everton, but unbelievable result in the circumstances.
So let's look at that. What's ahead then, shall we? At the bottom of the table, Norwich City already down. Watford seemingly not far behind them. So you're looking at Everton, Leeds and Burnley. The three that are the most in danger. Burnley have turned things around, though.
Yeah, Mike Jackson in there, you know, after Sean Dyche left. Is it 10 points
from 12? 10 from a possible 12, yeah.
I now worry for Leeds United because I was looking at the fixtures, but also looking at the squads. Stuart Dallas now out for them. They had Phillips has just come back from a lot. He was a huge miss. Bamford's been out. They lost Cooper, I think, yesterday in the warm-up. They've got a bunch of kids. They've had a ravished injury season. And their fixtures, in my opinion, are slightly more difficult. You've got Burnley, who've got Villa to play twice because of the COVID problems in Newcastle. But Leeds, Arsenal, big win for them today. Chelsea, that's a tough game for them. Brighton, Wallop, Wolves, and are in the top half. And then you're at Brentford on the last day. I don't know about you, Shaq, but I'm kind of thinking, looking at those fixtures, Leeds are in the biggest trouble.
It is the hard part. You're looking at those fixtures to come. You look at the form of everybody else, and Leeds lose to City this weekend. Before that, three wins and two draws in their last five under Jesse Marsh. So they come into City game apart. They come into this run-in with a bit of form, as have Burnley. As Everton, I think this was a huge result, not just because of who the opposition was, but just them kind of responding to the emotion of the situation. And it becomes very difficult to call for that reason, because all these teams come into these run-ins in some form. And as we keep seeing, you're down the bottom for a reason, because you don't win very many games. So you look at the fixture list and you try to decide which is the toughest. But the fact of the matter is, you're the worst of the bunch. So you go into almost every single game, regardless, as being an underdog.
And then there's the goal difference for Leeds, which understandably is worse than the
other
two.
And I get what Jesse Marsh was doing yesterday, for those that saw it. I don't know if there's been a response to it. After being walloped by City, which is no shame, you know, the fans at Leeds apparently were magnificent behind the team from start to finish. Probably knew what was coming. And he was sort of winding them up at the end and appreciating it. And I know some people might say, and I don't know, I haven't seen any opinions on it, but maybe some people think that's an over-the-top reaction. But what I think he's trying to do is garnish that energy from the supporters who are not booing the team, who understand that Bielsa did some magic and got them up, but they haven't really spent any money. They've used kids for a long time. They didn't get games called off when they had the COVID issues, middle of the season. Played a lot of games with kids, and now he's trying to use that energy from the supporters to keep behind them, similar to Frank Lampard in a sense at Everton. So I kind of got what Jesse Marsh was doing yesterday, but I just think their predicament with their squad is really, now that Everton have got these 3 points today, is going to be a very difficult one.
For more talk on the battles at the bottom and the top of the Premier League, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Son and Kane were both on the score sheet in Tottenham's 3-1 win over Leicester after no goals in their last two games. Were you impressed with what you saw from Spurs today, Shekhar?
Yes, I was. I thought Leicester started the game really well, but invariably when you're in the position that they're in and you know the end of the season is coming soon, you kind of fade as the game goes on. And credit to Spurs, who I thought recognised that and took full advantage of it and got a couple of great goals. Again, the performance of Heung-min Son, his importance to this team is simply phenomenal. It really is. But I thought Spurs, as I say, just kind of rode out what was a good start by Leicester, and then once it did, they were easily the better of the two teams and deserving of the 3 points.
Frank, do you agree with Shekhar?
I do. It's quite amazing what I see. I mean, except the first half an hour, but I think the team of Spurs are quite efficient today, and I see the talent overall coming up and being effective. You know what? The thing is, at the end of the season, you see different goals from different teams, where Leicester is more, the focus of Europe, where Tottenham tried to get the third or fourth place spot. And it's the same. Chelsea is the same. In a fight with Chelsea, doesn't really care finishing third or fourth, where they know they're going to get the Champions League and their only goal will be the FA Cup. We're going to talk about Arsenal or West Ham, especially West Ham. We'll have to play the second leg of Europe, and we're more tuned in on that than the game today, seeing some main players being on the bench like we saw Leicester. So it's quite normal to see Tottenham dominating that game and winning that game. But I have to say that the way they play, the way they were into the game, and the way the coach was into the game was really pleased me.
This one tickles me because it's Leicester in the semi-final of the Europa Conference, as I said to you the other day, I think, when Brendan Rodgers, near the start of the season, was asked about it, he says, I've never heard of the competition. We're in the Champions League not too long ago, now on the Europa Conference. But, you know, from Spurs' point of view, there is a really tasty North London derby coming up. Now, I think before that, they they have Liverpool.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that kind of a sway in the championship. You know, Spurs going there and playing a counter-attacking style, as we know they will. And then they have that North London derby. He seems to have settled more on, have more of a settled side now, Antonio Conte. Particularly the back in the midfield. That back three has been operating together for quite a while now. And that midfield, Bentancur looks as if he's settled in. Obviously, Højbjerg giving them a bit of protection in there. So they do look, and of course, listen, when those, Shaq said, when those two players are on fire and on form, and then Lucas played today, then you're always going to give yourself a chance. So, some really, I mean, Spurs can have a big say now, not only obviously in where they finish, but what happens with the title in the next couple of weeks.
Arsenal knew they had to win in their game against West Ham, playing after Spurs. Jared Bowen cancelled out Rob Holden's opener, but Gabriel got the winner in the 54th minute to give Arsenal all 3 points and move back above Tottenham.
A big win for Arsenal, Craig. Battling well in that top four place.
Oh, huge. It was only seemed 2 weeks ago, prior to their match at Chelsea, they had their chins on the floor. We're on a losing streak. I think it was three straight defeats or something like that. And it looked as if it was all getting away from them. Went to Stamford Bridge, played well. Chelsea were poor, got the victory. And that just seemed to set them in motion again. And now they're back in the hot seat. And are probably favourites at this moment to get that top four. But like a few of the sides around them have shot themselves in the foot several times already. So, yeah, big, big win. Particularly when you play after a team that's a rival has posted a good win. That sometimes is more difficult. And they went out to a very good West Ham side and put in a more than decent performance. Interestingly enough, though, Lacazette, again, just not involved.
Were you impressed with Arsenal today, Frank?
Well, I think there is always consequences of what they have to face in a way that they play Chelsea lately, who seems to not be cared about the rest of the champion of the Premier League. Now they play West Ham at home, who is more focused on the second leg, as I said before. But they do well. They came back, as Craig said, they came back to the good track where they can fight and be on the third or the fourth spot. And where we thought like a month ago that they were completely lost and came back to their weaknesses. They do well, but again, I want to know, and I'm very looking forward to seeing that derby against Tottenham at the Spurs Stadium, to see who's the best team between the two. That will be a real big game for the end of the competition.
How does the season end now for West Ham? What's the best that we can see, given that they are still in that European competition?
I think the best you can hope for West Ham is somehow get the better of Eintracht Frankfurt. You see what happens in Europa League final. But I've felt for some time that West Ham were destined for that 7th, 8th spot in the Premier League at best. And you saw this in seasons go by where West Ham started so wonderfully well but then faded. They just don't have the squad depth to keep up like the others do. Add in this deep Europa League run and you fully understand. And I think the fans are as excited for what's to come in the Europa League as they are if they were within 2 or 3 points of the top four. I think the fans have responded to it. You could understand the players feeling that way. You just look at the starting lineup that David Moyes put out. No Suchek, no Michael Antonio, Mark Noble included from the very start. And you feel everybody has one eye on that second leg against Eintracht Frankfurt. And so you understand. And you sympathise.
I think, you know, obviously from club perspectives, the top four is important financially, as well as the gravitas of bringing players in. But to go back to what Shaka was saying, I think as a generalisation, the fans are fed up with it. In a sense that they would rather have something tangible. You know, okay, it's some bragging rights if Arsenal beat Tottenham or Tottenham beat Arsenal or whatever. But you have West Ham, who didn't really, you know, if they wanted to go for the top four, would have had to have spent in January. Probably it wasn't going to happen. But you have the supporters looking forward to, you know, potentially a Europa League final. Now, the chances of it happening are not in their favour because they're 2-1 down against Eintracht Frankfurt. But that's more exciting than whether my team finishes fourth or not. Yeah, boardroom level might be different for some executives or a manager who maybe wants more money to spend. But I think from a fan's perspective, it's about going to major finals and winning stuff.
And listen, this is a fan base that do not go to major finals, do not know anything about deep European runs. So they're enjoying it for what it is.
For what it is right now. But in the battle for the top four, we're just seeing the remaining schedules for Arsenal and Tottenham. And we do allow you guys to change your mind on a weekly basis.
Well, I did say I'm not involved in this because I said Man United.
Okay. So if it's from these two.
So I'm out.
Frank, I mean, Arsenal or Spurs?
Because of the game they have to play against each other, I will go for Spurs, I will say. Hey, can I go back to West Ham for a stat for Xhaka? Just to let you know that on the all history of West Ham, they never finish in the best seventh spot twice a year in a row. So because last year they finished sixth, I think it tells you that there is no big chances that they finish in the first seven, just for you.
Did
just
your algorithm
to be
show
about
you that?
No, my algorithm didn't show me. I wasn't alerted to put in that data, okay?
Go on, who are you going for out of those two, though, Craig?
I'd need to see that graphic again.
Can we bring the graphic
again for
Craig? I don't
know if we can. If we can't, it's not a problem. But because... Oh, thank you. Because Tottenham have Liverpool, I'm going to edge towards Arsenal, even though they have which would probably mean they could draw the North London derby if we're giving them victories in the other games, and that's not a gimme. But because Tottenham have to go to Liverpool, I think that for me tips the balance in Arsenal's favour.
So yeah, but Craig, Craig, Arsenal has to go to Newcastle.
If Newcastle, Liverpool.
Yeah, of course. But they play against Tottenham at Watt Hart Lane.
Have you got a stat for that, Frank?
That could be tricky. Excuse me?
Have you got a stat for that?
A stat? No, I don't. No. I don't.
Well,
we
thought Newcastle was going to be more of a thorn in the side of Liverpool yesterday, bearing in mind their recent form. But
Liverpool.
It was Liverpool.
No. But what I'm saying is, we thought it was going to be more of a game. Now people look at the scoreline and say, "Well, it was tight in the score." Liverpool made so many changes, and yet completely out. I mean, it should have been 3 or 4-0. Yes, it's Liverpool, but look, all these games are tricky. You know, the Brighton fixture is tricky as well. They've picked the season up after a bit of a bump, beating Wolves yesterday. I think they're up to ninth. All these games at this point of the season are tricky. Guess why? Pressure. But because of the Liverpool game, I'm just edging to. And I do think Arsenal, for me, are just a slightly better side. I do.
So this morning I did digital for the website, and after
you've been a busy man.
Yeah, well, just getting saying, that out after there. The Spurs game, I said I was leaning Spurs just because that North London derby is at home, because they're the home side.
After the Spurs game.
After the Spurs game, so some 5 hours later, and you said we're allowed to change our minds regularly. Okay, I didn't know if we could do it four hours later, but I'm thinking I'm leaning Arsenal just because a draw will do them. It's a game that Spurs have to win, but a draw will do Arsenal. And so I'm leaning Arsenal now. Ask me again tomorrow, though.
Oh, we will.
Do you have to tell everybody what you're doing? And I see you're doing digital this morning.
No, Kay's
been on the show last week.
No, I was just covering myself because I said Arsenal this morning.
Kay's been on the show last week.
I said Spurs this morning.
Telling everybody she hosted the Ballon d'Or twice.
Yeah.
Now you're letting the audience know you're working really hard today and you've been at it all morning. digital and...
I mean, he's changed his mind in one
I'm just
day
saying.
Now.
He's just trying right, to I'm just covering myself because right? I know what you're like.
I wasn't doing digital this morning, is that okay?
Well,
and he didn't host the Ballon d'Or either.
No, not twice.
Not even once.
Listen, before we move along from the Premier League, Gab Marcotti's with us because we'd like to talk about Chelsea and whether the new ownership is going to be confirmed soon, Gab.
That's a great question because there's so many twists and turns. What we seem to know for now, because Rain, the people handling the sale, haven't actually confirmed anything, is that the group led by Todd Boehly, the owner of the LA Dodgers, and Hans-Jörg Wyss, the Swiss billionaire, that they've been granted an exclusivity period. The reason we know this is that we know that somebody's been granted an exclusivity period, and the other two bidders, Stephen Pagliuca and the Coe Broughton bid, have said that it's not them. So we presume that Todd Boehly's been granted this exclusivity period. The big sort of twist in the tale was on Friday when Ratcliffe, Jim Ratcliffe. He's this British billionaire who lives in Monaco. He's a tax exile. He came in with a bid, which was initially reported to be well over anybody else's, $4.25 billion. Look closely, and it's actually a $2.5 billion bid. But then he promises to invest another $1.75 billion over the next decade. He made a big deal out of the fact that his is the only British bid, blah, blah, blah. Of course, people might say, well, if you're so British, why do you live in another country for tax reasons? But hey, I'm editorializing here. Anyway, it doesn't seem as if he's getting any traction with the Rain Group or handling the sale. They've said, no, we have an exclusive bidder. We're going to see if they can complete this this deal in the next 5 days. That's what the period of exclusivity means. There could be more twists and turns, though, because remember, Kay, after this, it goes over to the British government, and they have to grant the license to the sale. We have no idea what parameters they're going to use because, again, they haven't told us. My guess, especially if there's a higher bid out there from Ratcliffe's people, my hunch is that I think this could rumble on further and further, and they may have to extend Chelsea's trading license beyond May 31st. Remember, that's the day it expires. After that, technically, they have to stop trading. I don't think anybody wants to see that happen.
Right. We want to just stick with Chelsea.
Let's hope
moment.
It doesn't go all the way to the top of the British government and Boris Johnson has to make some sort of decision.
We're not going to get into politics today.
Holy smokes.
But we are going to get into Pulisic because this was tweeted out by Mark Pulisic saying the sad thing is he loves this club, speaking about his son, teammates and London, puts his heart and soul into being a pro. Onwards and upwards, my boy. Big 6 months ahead. Why is this being tweeted out, Craig? What do you make of it?
I don't know. I have never experienced this because, one, social media wasn't around, particularly when I was a younger player, and two, my father never really got involved in those kind of scenarios. I'm going to see the coach on your behalf. I don't know. It seems to me there's a frustration that he's not getting regular game time, the regular game time that they would want. There's a World Cup in less than 6 months or 6 months, roughly, where the US are going to be involved. He'll want to be playing regular. But look, at the end of his period at Dortmund, he wasn't, or part of it, he wasn't, and he had injuries, but he wasn't playing regular. They had Jadon Sancho making a name for himself and a guy called Bryn Larson. Frank Lampard didn't play him regular, but played him, and it was a conspiracy that Lampard didn't like American players. Even echoed by the current Leeds United manager, spouting nonsense on American radio. And now we have Thomas Tuchel, who's played them, but not regular. So there's no coincidence that at least three of these coaches have had him in and out of the team. I think when that happens, when you take injury out of it, you start having to look at yourself or just say, does he think there are better players that fits what I'm trying to do? Thomas Tuchel, and I've said this about Lampard and others, and all managers, generally they're not leaving a player out because they think, they're not picking another player ahead of Christian Pulisic because they think he's poorer. They're picking other players because they think on that particular day, these players will do a better job and fit into that particular system. That's a decision that managers have to make. And if you're a father or a parent or a supporter or a family, whatever it is, that's something that you have to accept in this game. This is not kindergarten school football here. This is jobs, this is billions of dollars, this is livelihoods. Managers make big decisions. And there's a lot of frustrations, but Christian Pulisic, it seems to me, a player who a lot of coaches recently have seen to be a guy who comes off the bench and does that pretty well.
Do you think he might be moving on, Frank, when we see tweets like this?
Well, yeah, it's possible. I don't know if it's sad or not. You know, as Craig said, you know, it never seemed to be essential to any coaches that he was working for. Whether it was for Dortmund or Chelsea with Frank Lampard and Tuchel, I think he has the pressure of a country behind him just before World Cup because he's a skipper of the US national team. But in Europe, we don't see him as a real leader. We don't see him being the guy who's going to save Chelsea or do something. In France, we have Mbappe. In Norway, they have Haaland. In Portugal, they have Ronaldo. And I'm very sorry, with all due respect, because I think he's a very good player, he is not at the same level as the players just mentioned, and he's not the leader that other countries have. And that's it is what it is. He still has the time to be stronger. But if he thinks it's unfair, yeah, he should leave Chelsea. Otherwise, he should fight for his spot. Because, nothing is done, especially at front at Chelsea. Everybody is looking for, all coaches who have been in charge there are looking for, the front line, because it's been a mess for more than a year.
Is there an argument to be made in his favour, though, Shaka? There's been injuries, he's not been playing in his preferred position.
No. I understand and I sympathise with the position that Christian Pulisic finds himself in. But that is always, when you go to big clubs, that is always the risk, regardless of who you are, that club can bring in or bring through incredibly talented players, and your job is always up for debate. It's always in question, regardless of who you are. We're having the same discussion around Romelu Lukaku and Timo Werner. And, that is part of being involved with a big club. So, but I, the thing that really stuns me with this is, okay, we all know it's going to be a big 6 months for Christian Pulisic. US are about to play in their first World Cup in over 8 years. And I suspect that's how this tweet is going to be framed. I am a father. I understand that you sometimes get frustrated when you feel your child, and in this case your son, is being unfairly treated. But Mark Pulisic knows this game. He's been involved in this game. He has to know that this cannot help in any way. He has to know that this is what the game is about. That when you play at the highest level of this game and any game, everybody's gunning for your spot. Every single player, regardless of where they play, which other club they play for, they want that spot. So throwing this kind of fuel on any kind of fire, I think it's damaging to his son's prospects. So while you're frustrated, while he's frustrated, now all of a sudden you have a fan base who are questioning Christian's motives, what he's planning to do, and it's bemusing that we keep having these discussions about family members. If your agent does it, it's bad enough, but where, if your uncle and your father's doing this, it makes it far worse for me.
I wonder what Tuchel's got to say about this.
He's had a Tuchel few, will not be bothered his backside about it.
Chelsea taking on Liverpool in the FA Cup final May 14th. You'll be able to see that and all the build-up to it from Wembley here on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Barcelona got back to winning ways at the Camp Nou with a 2-1 victory over Mallorca. Memphis Depay and Busquets on the score sheet. But Luis Garcia, was it enough to get the fans coming back to the Camp Nou?
No, I don't think so. I think that maybe if Ansu Fati is getting into the 11 starting in the coming weeks, maybe it will attract the attendance, a bigger attendance at the Camp Nou, because definitely we've seen a good Barcelona for center minutes after in the first starting of the second half. We've seen a lot of movements up front. The ball was moving quick and we could see a few chances. I think Memphis Depay has done a fantastic game after being away for quite a long time. We're still missing a lot from the young. We need him a lot more. Gavi, I think he did a good game. Busquets, as always, is the heart of this team, and today he scored his third goal of the season. But definitely not the best game. And after all that, we felt again that this Barcelona was vulnerable again. He stopped controlling the game, gave the chance of Mallorca to get a goal. And also, in the last couple of minutes of the game, you could see that something could happen from Mallorca's side. So that's something that I'm sure that Xavi needs to continue working on. And I got one big concern. It's about Piqué and why he was involved into the game, knowing that he's not 100%, because that means that Xavi doesn't have the trust in Lenglet and in Eric Garcia, and those are the centre backs that are going to be playing for the rest of the season, probably, because Piqué is going to be out. And that's something that concerned me a lot, because Piqué wasn't 100%, it was maybe 75-60, and it needs to continue playing. That's because Xavi doesn't trust the other player, and that's something that they need to look at it.
Yeah, maybe good news for him that it is coming to the end of the season. Let's talk a little bit about Memphis Depay, though, getting a goal today, getting a start as well. There was a lot of talk in the January transfer window when all these attacking options came in about his future, but he does show often what he can offer for Barcelona going forward.
No, I think it gives him something different. Obviously, Aubameyang's in for at the moment. He gives him a bit of pace over the top. Depay can fill several, you know, three or four positions on the front line, up front, wide, behind the striker, technically very good, will get you his quarter of goals. It's just the chat that he's going to have with Xavi in terms of what next season holds. Does it hold? Does he see him as somebody that's going to fit into a front line with other new signings, potentially? Or does he see him as someone who is a really good player to come off the bench? If you look at all the big teams in Europe, Real Madrid, but particularly Man City and Liverpool, the two sort of juggernauts at the moment, the one of the things that they did, both clubs, they went away, first of all Man City and then Liverpool, they strengthened their benches. Now Liverpool latterly, their benches has been amazing, but a couple of years ago we sat here with our colleague Stevie Nicol and there wasn't much coming off the bench. So to that point, Xavi, it's not just about building an 11, it's about building backup. And I'm kind of 50-50 on where Memphis Depay is going to fit in. I can't answer that question because I'm not in the head of the Barcelona manager. But I'm not convinced that Xavi's convinced that he's an automatic starter, but I'm sure he's convinced he knows he can use him as a squad player. As Shaq will know and Lewis will know, it's hard to convince good quality players they're not going to play every week and be happy. So that's a difficult scenario.
I think that's the thing. I like Memphis Depay a lot. And I think coming off the wing is when he's at his best. So he fits in with an Aubameyang through the middle. And I know he was used through the middle early on in the season, certainly before the January transfer window. having to fill that void. But I feel he's best coming off from more of the wide areas. But as you look at Barcelona and the way that they are seeming to move forward with the likes of Pedri and Gavi and Ansu Fati, if he can stay fit, any of those three can play, come from wide areas, can come through the middle themselves. So now you have this conundrum with the talented youth. Let's assume they all stay fit. You've got Memphis Depay, who equally talented, but has cost a lot of money, will be on a lot of money. How does that fit into to your plans for the youth of the squad? How does that fit into Memphis Depay, whether he just sees himself as a bit part player? That is part of the balancing act and man management that Xavi has to get absolutely right.
Yeah, it's obviously still a work in progress, Luis, and Xavi needs more time, but he definitely does need more players if they are going to contend with Real Madrid next season.
Yeah, and I think Craig just spot on. I mean, it's not about creating a fantastic 11 because you never know what is going to happen during the season. It's about how deep is your squad, how the season is so long. You're going to compete in La Liga, you're going to compete in the Cup, you're going to compete in Champions League. And if you want to win every single trophy, you need to have players who can compete every single week in and week out, and also midweeks. And that's a lot on this amount of games that all the players are having, international breaks, that they play 2-3 games in a week and they come and they travel. You need to have a squad that is gonna be used when it's needed. And Barcelona is a team who needs 7, 8, 9 players who, and the moment that you decide to change and rotate 3, 4 players, you know that the level is not gonna go down. And I think Memphis is one of those players. The problem is if he's gonna be looking for it, because definitely he's a player with a lot of personality. He wants to be important. He's a character, and of course you need to manage. So that's Xavi's business, to try to convince him that he's going to be an important player in some games, but probably not in all of them.
If you look at the difference in, you know, what Barcelona have been operating with recently, they're not bad players. It's been a lot of youngsters, as Shaq mentioned, coming off the bench are not fit. But I go back to Liverpool. You look at that front five now fitting into three. You know, you've got Jota and Firmino coming off. And you look at the midfield. You know, Fabinho didn't play yesterday, but Thiago can play and Henderson can play. And Keita doesn't always play. And then you can get Joe Gomez coming in. You can take centre-backs out, Matip out, and put Konate in. He's got a cover for Andy Robertson and Tsimikas. That's kind of the gulf at the moment. You've got Barcelona going out to Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League. They've had a very inconsistent year, albeit they could finish second in La Liga. But you go to these elite clubs now, and not only have they spent big, but they've almost all got cover for every position. Not quite, but almost. So that tells you just how big a job. Now, it might not need that big a job to overhaul Real Madrid.
Well, they beat them 4-0 in the last Clásico, didn't they?
Because we don't know what's going to happen. But if you want to be competing on every competition now, and particularly La Liga and the Champions League, you're going to have to get cover for a lot of those positions. And bearing in mind the financial situation at Barcelona, as well as the squad situation and the rotation of players, the amount of them, that's going to take time. I can't see that happening in one transfer window in the summer.
It just doesn't help either, Shaka, when times aren't as good as they could be, when you're looking up the table at Real Madrid, who've just secured their 35th Liga title and are still in the Champions League at this stage.
Yeah, listen, but as much as it may hurt Barcelona and their fan base right now, that's kind of where you are. And truth be told, you're far better, in a far better position now than any of us would have said or thought 6 months ago. But it can't be easy when you're Barcelona and you know the only measure is Real Madrid, who've romped away with the title with games to spare in the Champions League semi-final, to kind of accept where you are and just talk about, well, we'll be okay in 3 or 4 transfer windows. That's a really bitter pill for everybody involved with Barcelona to swallow. And then you see these scenes. And it has to hurt, because you are not sure when or how you get yourself back at that level.
I'm presuming that those pictures were banned from local TV in Barcelona.
Maybe.
I'm not sure they weren't making the news bulletins.
No, it's not nice to see, is it, Luis? The rivalry is strong. It always is. And it's difficult to be watching Real Madrid celebrating like this for Barcelona right now.
I've been watching Netflix during the whole day, so no news for me. Everything continues normal.
But you know, the thing is, listen, they knew it was cut. They were such a shambles at the start of the season. They had to have known this was coming. I mean, it's not a shock. They were so in such disarray, from the boardroom to the management to the registering of players, to trying to get Messi out, or you know, fixing the budget cap, and then you had Sergio Aguero, who you know obviously had to retire.
But they're running up, aren't they?
Well, look, they're looking to me in a better shape than they were early in the season. But boy, they were on the canvas. They were on the canvas getting counted. So this is now what we call as players, ex-players, whatever, been at the beach. They're going to qualify for the Champions League. They're not going to win the league. They're out of all European competitions. Xavi will want a response to the end of the season, but as players, you kind of shut down. It's all about next season. And that includes the manager, who will get a bit of extra leeway because he's a cult hero there and a legend. But next year, it'll be about results for him. And I'm intrigued to see how they're going to raise and structure the finances over the summer to rebuild this squad. It's going to be intriguing, bearing in mind their haphazard approach at that very subject over the last few years has left them in the predicament that they were in the summer. It is going to be intriguing to see what they do, particularly if Real Madrid go out, which is the rumour, and get Mbappe or Haaland or both if he doesn't go to Man City. Ellen Haaland. It's intriguing then if Barcelona are going to be goaded into spending or trying to spend again what they don't have.
What do you think about what Craig's saying there, Luis? Do you think that maybe this has lit a fire under Barcelona to ensure that they get it right next season, to ensure that they are back in the thick of it with Real Madrid?
Yeah, of course. And they are trying to ensure first the young talent. I mean, Araujo was the first one. Gavi is going to be the second one to try to make a new deal and try to keep them. That's the future of Barcelona. Of course, with all the economically problems that Barcelona's got at the moment, they need to really work on specific players. I'm sure that Xavi has been working in the past 4 months about what is going to be the next season look like and how is the places that they need to strengthen most. At the back, they know that they're going to need to bring another player because what I mentioned, he doesn't have a lot of trust in Lenglet and in Eric Garcia at the moment. And Piqué, we don't know how is he going to continue next year, how he's going to feel because of his age, because of the way he's going to end this competition this year. And at the end, it's about trying to build a core, and the core is what we've seen at the moment. We know the style, we know the philosophy that Xavi wants to implement. We've seen a glance of what we can see next year, but now you need to put some more pieces. Ferran Torres is not working as he should. Maybe adaptation to the striker, it costs a lot of money. We need to maybe allow to some players leave the place, get a little bit of money, and then use that money to bring the perfect players. But I don't think that Barcelona is going to try to sign Haaland or Mbappe or any of those players. I think that, of course, if they are right, fantastic. But at the moment, it's about, I mean, if we've seen Liverpool do it, we've seen Luis Diaz arriving and clicking exactly the way that Jurgen Klopp wanted. Fantastic player in a moment that no one was expecting him to perform. Konate was exactly the same. So at the end, the moment that you find the right player, you just have to buy, and you don't have to spend a massive amount of money. Of course, when Barcelona goes to buy, it's always a little bit more expensive, but definitely they need to find the right players. If they want to try to spend 100 million in one player like they've done it 3-4 years ago, the problems are going to be there in 2-3 years. They have to find the right players and, of course, surrounded by the young talents that they got at the moment.
Yeah, and they've got some wonderful young starlets in that squad who we look forward to seeing more of next season. Real Betis still fighting to try and finish in the top four and secure themselves Champions League football. They take on Getafe on Monday, 3 Eastern, right here on ESPN+. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance.
Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Checking back in on La Liga's big game of the day, Barcelona taking on Mallorca and coming through with a 2-1 win. Not the most glittering of wins, but Memphis Depay on the score sheet in this game. Afterwards, our Gemma Soler managed to catch up with him.
With Memphis Depay, congratulations on the win and the goal. It was important to go back to victory today.
Definitely, very important, especially at home. We know what we have to do in the upcoming games, and today we had to like get that feeling back of winning, and so it was very important.
It was not easy to score that first goal. It was the Araujo's disallowed. It's been a while since that you last scored in La Liga. What was the feeling? How was that goal important for you?
For me, it's always good to score goals, especially to make minutes. You know, I had a couple of injuries, so quite unlucky, and then coming back and to help the team. And today, I was happy that I could start and show that I have the quality. And obviously, then to score a goal, it's always good. But we knew what we had to do today, and we had to be a little bit patient before the first goal. And after that, to be honest, we could have scored more goals.
As you mentioned, it hasn't been easy for the team, for yourself. What do you expect for these 4 match days you have left? And what do you think about the next season? Do you see yourself here in Barcelona next season?
For me, like, we knew that the beginning of the season that it was a new project. And I came here with the desire to play here. So for me, that's no question. Of course, I want to be important for the team and help the team even next year and hopefully for many more years.
There was a special moment when Ansu Fati came after this long injury. What do you think about him and how do you see this youngster?
Well, for me, he's a special kid, a happy kid, and I'm very happy to see him smiling again on the pitch. You know, it's really important for him, for his family, for Barcelona. So really happy that he is back with us. And we have to take care of him. We have to give him time. You know, he's a special talent, and he can have some time, and he will come back, I think, great. So
yeah. Really one happy. Last question. It's gonna be difficult for you to motivate yourself in these 4 match days.
No, of course not. Of course not. Every game we need to improve, and what I say, this is something that we tell each other every time in the practice. Also. From the beginning of the season, so yeah, we have to improve, and these last 4 games, it's really important for us how we end the season.
Thanks and congratulations on the win.
Gemma, we heard his own intentions on his future with Barcelona there, but what has been the talk in Barcelona about Memphis Depay?
Well, there are more doubts here in Barcelona because, of course, he hasn't been that common in the starts with Xavi. But it's true that in the last match days, in that terrible game against Rayo, he was one of the few ones who brought some quality. And today he was fit enough to score that important goal in a complicated moment of this team. It was more than 300 minutes here in this stadium where the team was not taking the lead. But he hasn't been that consistent, especially when we talk about against big rivals. Not in a match like today with a team trying to battle for relegation like Mallorca, and he did great with that kind of teams at the beginning of the season. Actually, even though he hasn't played that much, he's the top scorer with 11 goals in La Liga. But there are kind of some doubts about his performance. So I think that's why the next four games can be crucial, and especially Barcelona are moving. They are trying to find a shiny signing in the forward line. They are talking about Lewandowski, even though they were talking about Haaland too, even though it was a pipe dream. They are talking about Lukaku. So it will depend on if they can attract someone that maybe is more reliable. It will depend on that future. But I think there's one thing that it's pretty clear, that Memphis Depay is ahead of Adama Traoré. We thought today was a day for Adama going back to the start as Dembélé was not 100% fit. And Xavi decided to put Memphis Depay. So I think it's that quite significant that Memphis Depay, he came for free in the summer. Adama is on a loan. So I think he's ahead of Adama, and we will see. It depends on the signings, he will stay or not.
Gemma, you mentioned some of those bad performances in the game against Rayo. One of the players who was taken off was Frankie de Jong. We saw him exchanging some words with Xavi. There was some talk today in the press of Xavi having words with him and expecting a good performance from him today. You spoke to him after the game. What did he have to say? Did he mention anything to do with that?
Yeah, well, he was very upset that day against Rayo. About his probably was one of his worst games since he arrived here in Barcelona, and it was a complicated week for him. We know Xavi had individual talks face to face with some of the players. Frankie de Jong was one of him. They interchange opinions because Frankie is quite upset that he's always one of the first players to be sent off, taken off from the pitch. So they discussed about that, and it was quite a positive chat, is what Frankie de Jong explained to us. But he says that he knows what he has to do. And he's, according to Xavi, there are some rumors about his future too, because Barcelona needs to make money, and he could be a chance, as Erik ten Hag could be interested in him signing for Man United. As far as we know, he's a non-transferable player. Unless there is a crazy offer out of the market, they would consider it. But the information that we have is that he's not transferable. He's a key player in a long-term future with the Xavi's project. And Frankie de Jong, what he told us is that it was a positive talk and it helped, and it's helping him, even though he does know what he has to do. But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. He was, I think, quite relieved of doing back a good performance and going back to victory, because he was extremely frustrated the other game against Rayo.
A great insight as always, Gemma. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll let you get some rest. We see you staying late there at the camp now.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Just taking a look at Sunday's Serie A results, and cast your eyes over the two sides from Milan, both getting wins. AC Milan keeping it late, Inter getting theirs done early against Udinese, and the battle goes on at the top of the table. Both of them doing what they need to do and picking up all 3 points. How do you say this playing out now, Gab? Because there have been a few twists and turns now, and Milan do have a little bit of a cushion and a margin for error.
They have a very slight margin for error, Kay. I think it's interesting even to see the approach of these two teams, Milan against Fiorentina. That game was actually pretty wide open. There were chances. They weren't finished. Milan eventually coming through at the end with Rafael Leao after a mistake from the Fiorentina goalkeeper. I think for Milan fans of a certain age, they might be getting a little bit of sort of what Sir Alex called squeaky bum time, because their next match is against Verona. And Verona are a mid-table side who play at a million miles an hour. They go all out. And there's a history there. 1973, Milan were heading towards a title. What happened? They screwed it up against Verona and didn't win. 1990, more recently, again, it was Verona that undid them at the end of the season when they were in first place. So those who remember a little bit of history and who are a little bit superstitious, and as you know, in Italy, we love our superstitions, they start worrying a little bit about this Verona game and what might come out of it. If you're Inter, you got the job done. You know, scoreline was close at the end because Pusetto scored for Udinese, but I don't think the game was ever really in doubt. And you're sitting there and you're waiting and say, ooh, can we get history to repeat itself? If they do, we'll be right there to take advantage.
And meanwhile, Gab, we've seen your latest article about the sad passing of Mino Raiola, and obviously there'll have been a lot of talk about this back in Italy. What's his legacy going to be?
Well, I don't know that, you know, back in the 90s, there were agents, or some agents. You didn't have super agents. I mean, Mino Raiola, in the three decades that he operated, I think he, along with George Mendes, I think easily the two most famous agents in the world. Probably two people who are more powerful than many club officials or FA officials or whatnot. He had an incredible list of clients, starting from, and he's a guy who very much self-made, pulled himself up from his own bootstraps, used to work in his father's pizza restaurant in Holland, and one day approached the Ajax president who was eating there and saying, like, oh, let me help you sell Dennis Bergkamp. And they're like, who are you? You're my waiter. Yeah, okay, but I'm hungry and I'm ready to do this. And of course, he brought Dennis Bergkamp to Italy. That was one of the, created a huge bidding war around Europe for Dennis Bergkamp. So that kind of put him on the map. Since then, obviously, Holland, Pogba, Ibrahimovic, Donnarumma, Pavel Nedved, the Ballon d'Or winner, the list goes on and on. And he was always so blunt, so larger than life. People criticized him for being greedy. He famously, as we now found out, received a commission of close to $50 million when Paul Pogba moved from Juventus to Manchester United. And that was a deal, a transfer fee there was about $100 million. But he's always said the same thing. He said, all my clients, if they don't want me, they can just leave. The door is right there. And yet they all stick with him. And he says, the reason they stick with me is that I don't care about clubs. I don't care about fans, governing bodies, organizations, what people think. I only care about one thing, doing what I think is best for my clients. And clearly they all responded, because all these guys, they could have all gone with other agents. And yet they stuck with Mino until the very end.
Yeah, very sad news. Mino Raiola dying at 54 years old. That is all we've got time for on the latest edition of ESPN FC, but these two will be back, as will Frank Leboeuf, to answer your questions on Extra Time. Stick around, that's coming up next. Hello and welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks for sending your questions in. We've got Shaka, Craig and Frank Leboeuf here with us.
Oh, I'm just...
You're tired, Craig?
No, I was searching something and I got caught. So I thought
so
I would...
just keep looking.
Okay.
So
well, I thought
I got caught when on my phone with a camera. I thought I'll just carry on regardless.
When you get caught, you have to say what it is you were searching.
Well, I'll get there. Can't find it.
Carry on. Don't mind me.
Carry on.
Frank.
Yeah, can we carry on?
That's a very noisy coat. Yeah. Maybe some of the ASMR crew, if you know what that is, will like it. But no, I don't think you do.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means either.
I'm very sorry that I decided to wear that, but that's going to be the last time. I was told that it's too noisy.
But you
very
know,
sorry.
We see topless pictures of Frank sometimes, and so now here he is with a coat saying he's too cold.
You know, I'm in my new studio, but I don't have the heating, and it was quite chilly tonight, so in Normandy, so I have to wear something.
All right, don't,
I'm cold, so.
Don't ask me where I'm going with it. It's Dan Thomas who always brings it up, the picture.
I'm not blaming you for anything, Kate.
All right, first question.
Can I tell you what I was searching?
Yes, please.
It's not very interesting, but you... So, we just did, before we came on Extra Time, at the end of the show, we just did the highlight of...
Inter Miami and New England Revolution.
Correct. Which was 2-0. Which got my eyes kind of going a little bit, because I was talking to this man earlier, off air, and he says, oh, well, I was at the New England Revolution game last night. And I said, how did that finish? And he said, 3-0.
I thought it was 3-0. I did it.
So when we did the 2-0 on the highlights, I was like...
somebody stuffed up on the highlights. They've missed a third goal. It turns out, Mr. Concentration here was at the game and thought it was 3-0.
Yes, Jack. Obviously enjoying the hospitality a little too much, it sounds like.
Exactly. Hey.
All right. Hey. For Craig.
Another goal.
Ask a question, please. Ask a question,
for
William,
Craig,
please.
Do you see Benita as the main culprit of Everton's collapse?
No. He's part of it. Well, they haven't collapsed yet, but he was an early season part of the problem because he couldn't. A few things. One, he wasn't wanted because of his Liverpool past. But the big part of the problem at Everton has been the total waste of hundreds of millions of dollars, pounds, whatever, on substandard players. The recruitment has been terrible at Everton. Absolutely haphazard. Just sacking managers and throwing more money and then sacking managers and throwing more money. So no, it was a small part this season of not getting results, but not a huge part. Look at the board and the sporting directors and people like that. No?
Okay.
Managers will always take the blame. If Everton go down, Lampard will be castigated. But the problems at Everton, and you can agree or disagree if Lampard's a great coach or not, but the problems Everton run a lot deeper than that and have done for years.
There's a lot of Everton chat here. I just heard Frank's coat.
Is this what?
Heard Frank's coat.
So what's wrong with my coat?
It's a lot of noise. It's a noisy coat.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
It takes after
you. I know.
All right. Shaka, there's a lot of Everton chat, actually. Shaka, we saw Pickford take a powerful shot in the face today, and he still managed to stay on and produce two more wonderful saves later on. Have you ever been hit in the face? And if so, how hard was it to continue playing that game?
Get hit in the face all the time. That's part of the job. And you just keep on. I keep telling you, goalkeepers are the toughest players on the pitch. I keep saying that.
Why do you have to keep telling us it?
Because nobody listens when I say that. But Jordan Pickford just proved it yet again.
Couldn't even get the scoreline right a minute ago from a game you were
I got hit in the face one too many times, Craig.
I feel like Frank had something to say then.
Frank always has something to say, Key.
No. I was thinking that maybe he was hit in the head too many times to not remember that it was 2-0 and not 3-0 at the game that he saw yesterday.
I know, it's one thing missing a goal, but inventing one is even better.
I thought it was three.
Well, it was an even better game than you thought.
I wonder what Frank...
Was you getting mixed up with Ballon d'Ors and hosting? It was actually two.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it was. I was substituting Ballon d'Ors for goals.
Oh, I think it's the first time I've been on with Frank since I've rivaled him in the bragging rights.
I was playing golf with a friend of mine today, as you normally do if you've got friends. I know it might sound strange, but some of us do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acquaintances. Now, I was playing golf with a friend of mine today, and he said, I did enjoy the Ballon d'Or stuff last week. And two Ballon d'Ors.
I didn't pat myself on the back for
me and Rud Hillett.
Frank hates the Ballon d'Or, so we're not allowed to bring it up again.
Actually, I enjoyed that.
No. I'm completely with Craig. Completely useless. Just financial business.
I'm not saying.
I don't care about that.
You don't care.
Is that how you opened that? I presume you knowing that who you were hosting it with. I presume you did the opening. Is that how you opened it? Welcome to the completely useless 2000 and whatever it was. Ballon d'Or. Get stuffed. Something like that. Is that why you want us back on again?
Well, because I decided to do it the second time. Because I didn't do it the first time when I hosted it.
Okay,
because there were two. Just in case I didn't mention it.
Two Ballon d'Ors. You've won two Ballon d'Ors.
I've been closer to the Ballon d'Or than most people here, right?
We wouldn't even go.
That's absolutely right.
All right. When City played Atletico, Craig was critical of Atletico wasting time. What does Craig make of Everton's time wasting today?
Atletico wasting time?
So when Atletico were wasting time against City...
Where?
I think this is a Man City game, right?
I think it's just how long they were taking over throw-ins yeah. and goal kicks.
Yeah, the first leg.
Maybe it was Stevie Nicol. But there was a lot of criticism towards that. Should there be criticism towards Everton?
Everton were wasting time in the Liverpool game at Anfield from the first few minutes.
From Pickford, yes.
I wasn't so critical, to be honest, of Atleti's wasting time. I might be wrong, it could be on tape somewhere. I'm more critical of their approach and what I would consider at times the thuggery, certain players. I was more critical of that than the time wasting, to be quite honest with you. So I might be wrong, because my memory's not great. I'll have to go back and look at it, I'll do it later.
There could be made the argument as well in their defence that one side is hoping to survive in a top flight and one is supposed to be fighting to get to the next level of something. Yeah. So, more understandable.
I'll go back and check tonight on the tape.
Yeah, go back.
Studious like that.
Let me know how
liar.
New England liar. In Miami finish.
Liar.
Well, I'm going to watch the Inter Miami New England game because it was super exciting. Yeah, it was 3 goals, 2 sendings off.
Let Shaq know how it went.
I'll let Shaq know the result at the end of it.
All right. For Frank, how big of a loss would it be for Ligue 1 if both big clubs of Bordeaux and Saint-Étienne are relegated?
Oh. I lost you.
Can you hear me now, Frank?
I don't hear you anymore. I'm sorry.
Okay, Frank, what's it like to win the World Cup?
I think it's a big deal.
Tell us about the World Cup again.
It's a big deal if... do you hear me, guys, or not?
Just
do a sign.
We hear you.
Okay, good. So, I don't hear you, but I can tell you that, it's a huge blow if Bordeaux and Saint-Étienne get relegated because they represent a lot. It would be like if, for Saint-Étienne, if Liverpool would be relegated and for Bordeaux... Chelsea. That would be a big blow. So hopefully they're going to survive, but I have doubts about that. And it happened to Saint-Étienne and Bordeaux already in the 90th. They came back. So yeah, well, that's two big clubs of Ligue 1 getting relegated. It's a big blow. But at the end of the day, you know what? Ligue 1 is about Paris Saint-Germain most of the time, and the rest is trying to follow.
Okay, they're going to try and start Frank's audio.
Hold on, wait, Frank, can you hear us?
Oh, you're back. You're back, guys.
Oh,
I hear you.
Dumb.
Now. I hear you.
Dumb.
All right. Next question to all. I'll start with you, Shaka. Iñaki Williams has played 229 consecutive Liga games for Athletic Club. Who was the one teammate you remember who was just never injured and always played?
Ooh. That's a good question. I don't know who that player was. I'm trying to think of who that was. I have absolutely no idea.
I don't know. I didn't play with him, but I know might not have been regular appearances, but Matt Holland, former Republic of Ireland, Charlton, Ipswich player, played an unbelievable amount, but he also played an unbelievable amount of games without a booking. Mm. Some stat like that. And I found it amazing as a central midfielder.
Brad Friedel, doesn't he have the record for consecutive games, Brad?
Well, you're a goalie.
So what does that have to do?
Well, he's goalies union.
But I'm just saying, I think he's got the record for consecutive games.
You get it wrong anyway, Craig.
And I think Brad credited, he started doing yoga. And once he started doing that, he hadn't been injured since.
Why is he laughing?
I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm laughing because if I cannot hear, it's because I have a technical problem. But it seems to for the two guys that they're next to each other, but they don't understand each other. So I don't know if it's a hearing problem or if it's something else. But they have an issue.
It's a technical problem for us too.
I need to clean my ears out.
All right.
I have a technical problem on this side.
No, I don't really. It's 228 points. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'll ignore that. It's hard to remember. So I'm trying to think who's not been on the treatment table. Frank. Can you hear us, Frank?
Can you hear us?
What?
Can you hear us?
I hear you very
Frank,
well, guys.
Which player did you used to play with who was never injured?
I was thinking about that. I think Gianfranco Zola had a very good record as well. I think he was... I don't recall him being injured. It's nothing... Yeah.
Okay.
No, all the guys are. Oh, seriously, well, it's very unusual.
Right, they're going to be like, aha, yeah, 6 years that is for Iñaki Williams. It's incredible.
No, it's incredible to you know, you've got to be quite fortunate to play at elite level and not.
Not get injured, continue getting picked, not get suspended. Crazy. All right,
how
Frank.
How do you not get booked? Suspended.
Frank, where do you rank Benzema among France's all-time best footballers?
Wow.
Well, there's been some good ones.
Wow. It's hard because the time that he didn't play for the national team didn't allow him to be a world champion and show his real talent with the national team. So if you compare with Zidane, Platini or Coppa, who were, you know, leaders of all their generations, it's hard to put Benzema in the same level because doesn't have the same history with the national team. But definitely, if he's not there, he's not too far from there, because what he shows to the Real Madrid, especially right now, because I think Real Madrid are very average, but because they have Benzema, they're becoming successful. So when you're a leader of a team, that a club with that history, it's because you're a fantastic player. And he is a fantastic player, no doubt about that.
He had to get that Real Madrid hate in there, didn't he?
Yeah.
Always being anti-Madridista, Frank Leboeuf.
I had to mention
French have not had
a World Cup as well.
French have not had many good players over the years, to be fair, have they? Oh, I remember going back to that 82 World Cup, Platini was playing. Alan Giresse, Bossis. Oh, God. They could play those boys. Sorry, yeah. You can carry on now.
Has Son been more important to Spurs than Kane this season?
This season, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Frank?
No. No, I think Kane is a killer. He's always scoring the important goal. Son is doing the decoration, with all due respect, of course.
All right, well,
that's a very good way to explain it, that.
That's a bit harsh.
But
he's always doing the decorating. Son, that's harsh.
Well, I want to... No. What I want to mean, because I don't want... What I want to say is, do you recall one goal where Son scored and gave the win for Spurs? 1-0, for example. No, I don't. I remember Kane in many occasions where he did that this season. Almost every goal that he scored were very important. That's it. Well,
we're not going to ask Shaq.
If you ask me for Chelsea, if you ask me for Chelsea, for example, if you have to hire somebody next season for Chelsea, would you hire Kane or Son? I will go for Kane.
I think Kane is a more unique talent.
Well, Chelsea do need a striker.
Desperately.
More than.
But the question isn't like who's more valuable or who you'd get more for the transfer market.
This season.
It's who's been more important this season. And if Harry Kane is a striker and Heung-min Son has scored more goals than him, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but
who
get more assists? Sorry, Shaka, but I think if you put also the assists that Kane gave to the others, I think he's at front.
Yeah, Kane's got. I mean, Son has got assists too. Son got an assist for Kane today.
Oh, it's very tetchy, this.
I know, it's a bit frosty as well.
This could be pay-per-view.
Frank, we'll let you go and warm up. We see that you've been cold here joining us today.
And I love Son.
You just hate Son.
You just hate Real Madrid.
You just call him a decorator.
Hates Son, hates Real Madrid, hates us, hates the Ballon d'Or. We'll let you go and hate on something else, Frank. Thanks so much for being with us.
Frank's turned into the angriest man on this show.
Sorry.
He's saying something.
No, he's not. No, he's not, Craig.
What?
Frank is not the angriest man on this show.
You sound very emphatic about that, Shaka.
Stop trying to palm that off on Craig and poor old Frank.
Frank has turned into the angriest man in this
show. No, he's not.
All right,
no,
I've been
no,
off.
No, you're still yeah, the most valuable person off, in that back. Show so far. No, you're still there. You're still the first.
If the Ballon d'Or was given out for the angriest man on the show, who's going to win it?
Not me. Maybe a few years ago,
Craig,
I would have won it.
Craig,
I
think from far.
Frank.
Yeah. Even if he's not at the top, for the next 10 years, people will give him the Ballon d'Or.
He'd be rivaling Messi.
But showing up.
That's just going to anger him even more.
I'm not responding to that.
We'll be back. We'll see you then.
Of course.
Actually, it'll be Sebi tomorrow.
Oh, I'm going to get angry with him.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.